Anyway, I had to go to County Lockup, 30 days, and I got out. And my friends, like any good military friend should do, said, "You want to like pay rent or get food? No, let's throw a party and invite whores and have a gangbang."
Hey, welcome back to Four for the Road, everybody. I'm your host, Ken, the artist formerly known as Punk Rock. And I'm sitting here with Professor Blade and our special guest. We got Fontaine from the Chosen Few Motorcycle Club. How you gentlemen doing today?
Holding on.
Yeah, we holding on. Blade,
Yes,
it's
it
been a long
is.
time since we've been able to have you on the show, man. What's going on with you? Any dastardly deeds keeping you from the podcast life or what?
Quite the opposite. Just laying low, trying to build up some business. You know, COVID did a number on my business, so it's had to restructure things, and that's kind of what I'm doing right now.
So, how did that affect the pimping industry?
You know, I suspect that the industry went up, and they're probably doing very well.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, I forgot. We can't talk about that on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
But so we got Mr. Fontaine, man. So we know you're hanging on, man. What's going on with you, man? You living life? You having a good one?
Yeah, yeah. That's about it. Just living life as best I can. You know what I mean, playing the cards is dealt to me. It's about the size of it.
Yeah. Well, we hope they're good cards, man. But I guess if these folks hang around long enough in the show, they will figure out what kind of cards you were dealt. Huh?
Yeah, very true. Very true.
So let's just fucking jump into it, man. So you're obviously in a motorcycle club, which means you ride. When did you start riding motorcycles, man?
Shit. Well, if you mean as an adult or as a child, I mean as a child, probably since I was maybe 5 or 6.
Okay.
And then, you know, just kind of kept going from there, from dirt bikes on up. So, yeah, so easily 40 years, I guess. But if you're talking about as an adult, since I've been about 19.
Hey, you mean to tell me you've been riding motorcycles for 40 years and you look like that?
Yeah.
I need to know your secret, man.
Oh, hey, smoke weed. No, I'm playing.
Smoke weed.
There it is. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. They say it keeps you young. I guess it may. It may not. I don't know. You know, I do it just because I enjoy it. My mom rides. My stepfather rode until he passed away. My brother rides. He's not in a club, but you know, he rides as well. My mom and my stepfather were in a club, but you know, one passed away, like I said, and my mom's retired. So,
yeah, we love his mom. She's cool.
Yeah,
she's all of our mom.
Yeah, basically,
we all call her mom.
Yeah, basically.
That's good. I'm glad that she integrated into the club there, man.
Right.
I tell people my biggest thing, you know, because a lot of clubs will say that, you know, their whole, you know, it's family job club, right?
Right.
And my goal, and I think everybody's goal, should be to blur the lines between number one and three, right? Where the family and the club are the same thing.
Right.
And I think that's rad that mom's helping out and she's, you know,
she came
into a bunch of other kids, you know?
Right. And that's really what it is with her. You know, all, especially in my chapter, and even like Blade knows, a lot of people in my club call my mom their mom, you know, and she treats everyone basically the same. Sometimes she treats some of my club brothers better than me, you know, but, you know, that's just how it is. You know, the club has been there like my brother has been, and they've been, you know, my family, like when I had my little troubles and, you know, jail stints and whatever, it was the club that was there, you know, as well as my mom and my brother and stuff like that. But, you know, that's the way we try to live this thing. You know, we understand the bike and the patch and all that stuff. We get it. But at the end of the day, you know, if you don't treat the next man next to you like your real brother, like they came out your mama womb, sometimes it doesn't work.
100% agree with that.
True story.
So let's talk about that, man. Let's talk about what was the Chosen Few. Was that your first club, or how did you get introduced to motorcycles?
Well, how I got introduced to motorcycle clubs, I was in another club at the time, called United Riders. And we had another club name that used to call us United Gangbangers. And the reason being is because we had basically a nigga from every hood, you know, in L.A., from Compton and Watts and L.A. It just didn't matter. And me being from Long Beach, it just spanned across. But the way I joined that club is because I live in Long Beach, but I used to work in Placentia. And I used to ride a motorcycle just because I didn't like traffic. You know, being in California, traffic is thick as shit. So going back and forth, I had a Cadillac or whatever. I ended up buying this motorcycle. So one day he hits me and he's like, hey, because he lived down the street. He's like, man, you ever thought about joining a motorcycle club? And, you know, for some of us, we never knew what motorcycle clubs were. You know, the only thing we see is what we see on TV and Hell's Angels and, you know, what you get off of that type of shit. So I was like, what you mean join a motorcycle club? And I was like, no, I ain't joining no fucking club. But then he's like, man, just come out with me one night and I'm going to show you and da da da. I said, okay. So after the first night, I was hooked from there on. You know, it was a party. It was, you know, it was camaraderie. It was all different kinds of clubs and patches and whatnot. And I'm, you know, of course, I'm talking almost 20 years ago, but that's just the way it was. And that's what drew it to me, you know, drew me there because of the camaraderie, the riding a bike, the partying, just all that. You know, my last club, like I said, was really just to me kind of a stepping stone. It showed me kind of what not to do. Even though I will give my old club members and founders one thing, they did teach us how to ride in a pack. That's for one thing. And they did teach us like how to take care of each other. I can say that one thing about my founders of my last club. Now, some of the politics in the club, were they fucked up? Yeah, for sure. But as far as being true to one another, they taught us, they kind of instilled that in a lot of us in that club. Coming to Chosen Few, though, it was more from, and I'm speaking from looking on the outside in, Chosen Few was all over the place when it came to riding their bikes. My last members, they didn't really ride too far. You know, they'd ride all through L.A. and stuff. But when it came to getting on the freeway and stuff like that, they kind of didn't want to do that. And Chosen Few was all over the place. So that was the thing. When I joined Chosen Few, a lot of people said, oh, they ride too hard and they ride too fast. And my thing was, well, that's what the fuck I want to do. I want to ride hard and I want to ride fast. And you motherfuckers are going too slow for me right now. So that's what really originally drawn me to Chosen Few. So,
man, and it sounds like you definitely have like a real solid foundation there too, about, you know, like being able to take care of each other,
and right?
The unity there, like that's a real solid foundation. And you know, you're saying that's so. Is that a club that's like just local to LA, like the LA area, or?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's even more impressive to me that you have a smaller club like that, that has that kind of bond. Right. Cause it's been my experience, and I'm not speaking for all of them or anything like that, or any of them really, but it's been, right, you know, very, very few clubs that are small, kind of like a mom and pop, will have that kind of bond and take it that seriously.
Right.
And I just think that's, you know, I mean, obviously I've met a few, but no pun intended, I promise. I just think that's rad that you got to experience that before, you know, you moved on up to the Chosen Few.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things, because the founders of that club, they had been in another club before. Some of their uncles were Chosen Few. So what I noticed was like some of the things we took when I joined Chosen Few, I kind of caught on, was like, oh, well, that's where you guys got this from. You know, and it was just certain ways that we move that was kind of the same way, you know what I mean, or in the same fashion. But again, it was mainly because one of my founders had uncles inside the Chosen Few. You know what I mean? They came from the Liberty Riders, and the father, some of his first cousins were founders of the club, the Liberty Riders. So
I should interject here that LA has such a rich motorcycle history. I'm learning stuff all the time. The sheer number of clubs in LA, I mean, LA is a little microcosm on itself, you know, in itself. So it's, if you ever get the chance to spend some time in LA, I mean, just when you think you've learned something, there's a whole lot more to learn about what's been there and what's still there right now.
Very much so. Very much so.
Hell yeah, man. So, I do have to apologize because there were very specific things Dave wanted me to ask you. So, so you're, I don't want to say like experience, but like, so you're very familiar with the California club culture.
Yes.
And then Chosen Few, being on a road, all that. How would you say that the California club culture differs from like other states that you've seen?
How it differs?
Yeah.
One, I think it depends really on like geography. So depending on where you live in California, the rules can be kind of laxed as opposed to in other areas, as far as like the kind of underwritten biker rules, or, you know what I'm saying? You understand what I'm saying when it comes to patch protocol and club protocol or whatever the case may be, the rules can kind of be kind of laxed in that sense. At the same time, there's more to do. Like, it's, I guess, the, I don't want to, well, I guess I would say it seems more fun and more lively as opposed to other areas. Because there are so many clubs, there's always something going on. You know what I mean? With the biking, whether it's the sport bike scene, whether it's the old school scene, whether it's the Harleys, there's usually something going on almost every weekend, unless it's Christmas or New Year's. And then even then it's something, or Thanksgiving, where at a time you're supposed to be at home with your family. But then even then there's sometimes still a function, because some bikers, that's all they have is family, is other bikers. So that's what I would say is kind of the difference. It's more as far as biking activities, biking rides, areas to go to, sightseeing, that's, it's more abundant in certain areas of California. But at the same time, the rules can get kind of laxed depending on where you're at and the way, you know, certain things are governed, as to where if you go down south or somewhere else, it'll get a lot more stricter on you.
Yeah, I got, oh, go ahead, Blake.
Well, so the weather doesn't hurt either.
I was going to say that too. And that could be part of the reason as well, as to why there's something to do every weekend. Because like they say, it never rains. Even though it's raining today, it'll be dry tomorrow. So, you know, that's another thing. There is no downtime, you know, I guess in California, where some people say, oh, you know, we got the snow. There is no snow where we're at. Just put a jacket on and keep stomping.
And I gotta say, that's I share your sentiment on that, because most of my club experience was in Southern California, San Diego,
right?
And you know, then I go to a place like Florida and I see how things are going out there, and it just blew my fucking mind how vastly different it was. Because I think, you know, like you go to like Arizona, New Mexico, like that whole area, that whole like Southwest area, you know, it's all very similar as far right. as how the community acts and how they conduct themselves. But right. then you know, like I said, I get out to Florida and it's just like what the standard was in San Diego that gets you hemmed up in Florida, or, you know, vice versa. Like what's the standard in Florida? People are going to pull you aside and be like, dude, what the fuck are you doing?
Exactly. And it goes both ways. There's certain, I guess, cultures or ways that they have that they come out here and it's foreign to us, you know, and that's the first thing they say, well, back home and da da da. Okay, well, it's the same for us. There's certain stuff that we do on this coast that you guys might not do or not, you know what I'm saying? And that's just kind of the law of the land. And that's what you're supposed to learn when you get there. You know what I'm saying? You learn, you know what I mean? The laws of where you at.
I think, and I think that's a big problem too, is that we got, I mean, you get a bunch of dudes with like an alpha type personality, right? And they'd be like, I'm going to do what the fuck I want to do. Uh-huh. And then they pick that, you know, which get, don't get me wrong, that's cool, right? Be you, just be authentic, right? But like, right. take that, and then it's, oh, well, back home, this is how we do it. Well, shit ain't sweet here like it is back home, G. Like, you ain't at home right now. You in, you know, wherever you're at.
Like they say, it ain't where you from, it's where you at.
That's right.
You know, so, and that really holds true to this, you know, this culture, especially when you're, you know, going into other geographical areas. You slide through Texas, if they got a certain attitude or area, you know what I mean, or problem with certain stuff, they're going to press the line.
Yeah. So it helps to know the law of the land, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of have to. You know, it's kind of like, that's why sometimes they have them little, you know, passing through pins and stuff like that that you get from certain clubs that you can pass through without an issue. You know, sometimes I think that's, you know, you're supposed to be your hall pass because you don't know the rules. But, you know, it is what it is. To me, I think everyone should still kind of learn them or know them. And that way you just don't be disrespectful. And don't, you know, and especially when it comes to like putting stuff on your vest, you know, just be careful. Don't, because you seen it on TV or you see it on the internet, just put it on because you thought it looked cool. Because that'll get your ass handed to you somewhere else.
Yes. Quite true.
Mm-hmm.
Quite true.
So how about you, Blade? I know you're a well-traveled man. What do you notice what do you think the biggest difference is between like Southern California culture and outside of the Southwest?
I think California tends to be very youthful in the culture. That's part of California in general. People riding with shorts, for one thing. I mean, you don't see that as often in other parts of the country. And some of that is the weather as well. But California as a state worships youth more than, you know, older folks. So you see that in the bike styles. You see that in the riding styles. And we're not just talking about MCs. I mean, there's certain groups of people who go around riding and stunting and stuff like that. And you know, it's fascinating to see. And I think that's very California. I think we've talked about something like that in the past. Even like the T-bars. I mean, I've got one of my bikes has T-bars on it. That's very California for sure. So I think you'll find some similarities in the chopper scene. Although I like to think that a lot of that started here in California as well. Some people might disagree with me, but some of those old school choppers that we aren't necessarily Harley, aren't necessarily Honda, you know, there's a Honda Yamazuka or Harley Yamazuka or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think that's very California as well. But, you know, I can't imagine being part. I'm going to stick around here. I know a lot of people are moving out of California and all that, but I think it's worth fighting for. I like it here, so I'll be sticking around.
Yeah, see, I miss home real bad, but you know, $6 gas in a $750,000 1,100 square foot house. That's not, you know, I don't know if I can roll that. You know,
you try not to think about that.
Yeah, no, you see, do.
That's what I try to. That's what I try to focus on, so I don't move back. But then, you know, like Fontaine brings up a good point. He says, man, we don't have to winterize our motorcycles, and we're supposed to be getting snow at the end of the month. So that hurts. That hurts a little bit. But, man, so have you always been in Long Beach, Fontaine?
No. I'm originally from Arizona.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I moved to California in the mid-90s, and I landed in Long Beach and haven't moved since. So,
but you've been a chosen few the entire time in Long Beach?
No, that's where I started in my last club. I started in the last club and then became chosen few after that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what's up, man. So you had the opportunity to learn from some of the founders then.
Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. It was different. I mean, because you had to think, like, the old G's were here. Like, Shorty Joe was still here, and Skilo, and Fast Eddie, and G.A., and even the father was still riding this bike when I joined. You know, Pee-wee was still around, Dangerous John. I mean, I can go down the line, and they were always on the yard. And, one thing that they, you know, that you I guess had to do. You didn't have to do it, but you were going to do it just because you were a prospect or on the yard or just because you wanted to listen to their stories. You would come in and just sit down, and they had no problem talking for hours about either old shit or answering questions to what you know, just what you wanted to know about just the bike life period. And being one of the older clubs, like, they just didn't, you know, with the OGs there, especially back then, they just didn't, like, you didn't want to, I guess, I don't want to say cross them or upset them. Like, you didn't want to look bad in their eyes. You know what I mean? You wanted them to kind of give you that praise of, hey, you know, you're going to be a good prospect, or you're going to be a good member. Or, you know, Shorty Joe used to tell me, oh, you remind me of me. And I never really knew what that meant, but I was just like, okay, you know, but I took it as a compliment, you know? But I think that was really the difference, because you got to hear the stories firsthand from the individuals who were there and who actually did it, and who actually, you know, put on the good fight back in the 60s and 70s. So it gave you a little more, I guess, more of a nostalgic feel rather than me reading it in a book.
For sure. And one thing that we are, being in our club, we're very fortunate that we still have some of these members around. Yep. Obviously, it's not the same.
Right.
I had the opportunity to sit down with a few of them this weekend.
Right.
And man, it's you learn something new every single time.
Right.
You learn something new every single time, and then you forget that you might think that you're a crazy biker right now, but we forget that these guys were the original crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still, and they still are.
Very true. And they, and to think, you had, they had a bigger fight, not just the biking scene. You know, you had the racial part you had to fight. You know what I mean? So it was like a double fight they had to go through.
Yeah. And the brothers, the white brothers and the brothers who were not black were also right there beside them fighting that fight. And I think that's what shocked a lot of people, because they didn't know where it was going to come from.
Right. Right.
Man. So what would you say? I'm going to put you on the spot here, Fontaine.
Go ahead.
What would you say the most memorable time is with one of the OGs?
Hmm. Shit, I got a lot. I ain't gonna lie.
I really wish we could see,
yeah.
Cause we don't really do video, right? And I really wish we could that face you made was just so great, man. It was just that.
Yeah.
It was like you were trying to search the hard drive, but you were kind of confused. And it was, bruh, that.
I'm telling you, I got so many. Like, it's hard to explain. Hard. Hell, let me just throw one I can just think of off top with Superman.
All right.
And I know you talked to Superman over the weekend, Blade, when you seen him?
Yeah, I didn't talk to him this weekend, but I've, you know, hung out with him many a time. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know what I said, because I seen him, and people took a lot of pictures of him and were posting. So.
I sent my prospect to him.
Okay. All right. Well, Superman. And at the time, Superman is originally from the L.A. chapter, but he ended up moving to Arizona. And, you know, and that's where he's at now. But I think this is back in like 2010 or 2011, something like that. We were coming back from Stockton or Oakland or something like that. And I knew I was drunk as shit. I knew I shouldn't have got up. I should have stayed my ass in that motherfucking bed, and I shouldn't have moved. But the night before, I had told Superman, I said, look, I know you got to go all the way back to Arizona. I said, the least I can do is ride with you back to L.A. You know what I mean? We go to L.A., boom, you gonna keep pushing, of course, but at least I'll ride halfway back with you. He was like, oh, yeah, you know, that's cool, da-da-da. So I said, all right, just make sure you don't leave me. My dumb ass, don't go to sleep on time. I'm drunk as a skunk in my room, window wide open with my boots on and everything, because, again, I was fucked up. About 6 o'clock in the morning, I hear, boom. I said, what the fuck? I look up, it's Superman getting on his bike. I yell out the window, I said, what the fuck? I just told you, don't leave me. I run downstairs, jump on a bike. I make it all the way from Stockton all the way back to Long Beach. thinking I'm cool. Mind you, hungover as shit. As soon as I hit that door, threw up everything I thought was in my motherfucking body when I hit that motherfucking door in that toilet. But I just, like I said, me, I was just amazed that I could make it all the way from fucking Stockton all the way back home and not have thrown up not one time coming on that fucking freeway. That's one story I know for sure that I never will forget.
Thinking he's cool all the way home, and then as soon as he kicks him hits the ground, he gets the mouth sweats.
I was drunk and hungover. Like I said, I think half the ride I probably blacked out because I don't remember half of it.
Damn.
Yeah, I remember having, I just know I ended up at home.
Hey, that's the important bit. Yeah. Hit it home.
Yeah.
That's all about
it. Yeah. But I remember, like I said, I got a lot of stories. Go ahead.
Man, what are we here for? Oh, I was going to say, I was going to put Blade on the spot, too. Because he want to sit back there all quiet and stuff, acting like he ain't been around forever in a day.
Yeah, put Blade on there.
Actually, you know, the story off the top of my head is with White Bar Art. We were in the Purdue Clubhouse having a great time. And he looked at his watch and said, we got to go to San Diego. And he had been invited to be a guest judge at a bikini contest.
Oh, yeah. He got to go. He got to go.
So,
he got to go.
I have never seen an old guy move so fast.
Yeah, he got to go.
And we're with his brother, too. And we're trying to keep up. It's like, he was going to make this. We didn't stop. He was going to make, and we made it. We made it. And, you know, they had him, the guest of honor, the seat right in front. But then I just, like, I thought back. I was like, we were having a good time there. We came here for this. And it's like, and the look on his face was just priceless. He was having such a good time. He was in his element. So just that ride was, it was hilarious. And the reason was hilarious.
The art is, he was a real one. Because I remember I used to catch him at L.A. Riders one time at, like, 3 in the morning. You know, and L.A. Riders was an after-hours spot. And I'm like, Art, what the fuck are you doing here? You know we're in Compton, right? It's 3:15 in the morning. He was like, yeah, I know Fonte. I said, okay. Shit. Go ahead, Art. Billy Badass.
That he was, man.
Yeah.
So I got to ask that then, right? Because so Dave actually had an opportunity to interview White Boy Art.
Mm-hmm.
So... Could you, for Dave, and obviously for the listeners, and a little bit for me, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Could you share a story about WBA himself?
Yeah, I remember one time Art used to get mad at me. At one point, they had made Art, you know, because he was older and retired, but he still wanted to be a part of something, right? So they had made Art the communications officer to all the chapters, okay? And at some point, somebody kind of flipped the script and kind of, I guess, took it from him and made somebody else the communication to. I don't know. I don't remember. I just know Art cussed me out so bad one day about not telling him some information. You know what I mean? He's like, Fontaine, I'm the this, that, and the other. And I said, Art, chill. Like, I'm not the dude. So I called, I think I was in Baldwin Hills at the time. I called the mother chapter and I cussed them motherfuckers out. I was like, uh-uh, y'all better call Art. Y'all better start telling him something. I said, because he called me again, I promise you, I'm going to go pick Art up. And I'm bringing him and I'm dropping him off right here. You know what I'm saying? Y'all you know, he called me, stressing me out. You know what I mean? But he was on my head about that. Like, but Art, he was always good. You know what I mean? He was always cool, always laid back. Like, that was just Art. You know what I mean? He was just himself all the time. You can't really explain it because he was just always himself. Like, he never put on no front to nobody. Everybody was his brother. Like, that's just Art.
He did get mad a couple of times.
Yeah.
Like, that. There was one time, I think it was in 2014 or 2015, when he was just cussing everybody out. He was sick. He was sick for a week and nobody checked on him.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't know what was going on, but... After that, everyone was checking on him. Like, I would call him at least once a week, or, you know, once every other week, just if I didn't see him.
That was art. It was all about like accountability to him, or you know what I mean? Like, if you don't, like, it's almost like if you don't see me, there's a problem. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's the way art was.
I wasn't going to get cussed out again. So it's like that.
Man, so art has some legendary ass chewings, is what I'm getting from this.
Oh, he was quite capable of that.
That's what it was. He was capable of it. He didn't do it all the time. Like, Art was laid back, chill as a motherfucker. But when he got irritated, oh, you're going to know it. Yeah, you're going to know it. He don't care. He cuss out everybody. Everybody in earshot.
So, I mean, I'm going to leave this part in it. But so we have some white boy art stories. Do we have any father stories? You said he was still riding when you were coming around, right?
Yeah, the thing with father, he was real quiet. Yeah, I mean, even Pee Wee, you know, some of the OGs would say that father was real quiet. So it wasn't nothing, you know, real big with the father. Like, you know, we used to go to his house, you know, and hang out with him, you know, a little bit every now and then, but not in big groups. Just, you know, every now and then. Like one time I started in the mother chapter. I went to Baldwin Hills, and at the time one of our vice presidents by the name of 5-0 had gotten sick. So they kind of called and asked for me to come back to the mother chapter to fulfill his spot. And so I did that. And at the time, some of the brothers were going back and forth and arguing with each other and stuff like that, wanting to fight all the time and just dumb shit. And it was fights over dumb, like I said, just dumb shit. So one day I go to the father's house, Cindy's there. And I said, Father, let me ask you something. Cindy stands up. She's like, oh, is it something club related? You know, do I need to leave the room? And I said, well, not really. You know what I'm saying? I just asked the father. I said, well, you know, what was the difference from back in the day when you guys could get 100, 200, 300 brothers to ride together at the drop of a dime? And at this point, we got to damn near twist your arm and kidnap you to get, you know, at that time, it was like, if we could get like 40 or 50 of us at a time, like you damn near had to threaten somebody. You know what I mean? And it was like, why was it like that? And he was like, and he only had one answer for me. He was like, we were nicer to each other. You know, because at that point, a lot of people, you know, sometimes were, it was like a pissing contest with each other inside the organization at that time. You know what I mean? And to me, it just didn't feel right. You know, there used to have a rule back in the day to where to get into Chosen Few, you had to be related. You had to be somebody, brother, cousin, something like that. That's where it came to the whole family orientated thing. You know, of course, after years, they kind of got away from it. But if you go back some years, a lot of them dudes were cousins, brothers, brother-in-laws, you know what I mean? Like it was somebody who was accountable for the next individual. So, you know, that's just the difference with that. But the father, he was always pretty quiet. You know, he would ride his bike and, you know, he'd get there and him and, you know, firstborn would hang together all night long. You know what I'm saying? That was his thing. We didn't let nobody mess with him. One time some kids, I don't remember, you probably remember this, Blade, when those kids in L.A. Had robbed him one time. And he had a little breakfast spot kind of around the corner from his house, and some little young punks robbed him and whatever. So we kind of swarmed the little breakfast diner and, you know, let them know, like, this ain't your average old black man. You know what I mean? I guess that's what the kids thought. They thought he was just some frail old black dude. We could just bump in the head and keep pushing. Nah, you touched the wrong old man. You know what I mean? And we're going to let you know. We're going to let this neighborhood know. We're going to let your mama know. Like, don't do that. You know, we let the little diner place know, like, this nigga, right? Do not let him get touched again. You know what I mean? No matter what, if you got to come out the back with a spatula and just start swinging, I don't care what you got to do. But don't let him get touched, you know? And that's just him. He was just a humble dude. But when it come to the OGs and they tell the stories, it's the same thing. They say father was a big dude. He was already tall, but they say he worked out a lot. He was swole. but he was quiet. But when he spoke, you're going to listen. I mean, he wasn't the one that you was really going to kind of deny or want to wrestle up against, because he was a big individual. And those who've seen some of his older pictures, he was pretty swole, especially for that time frame. You could tell he worked out.
Yeah. I remember that. I think I was towards the end of my prospecting, but we were elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
People started coming from, you know, outside. It wasn't just LA. It was coming from all over the place.
Right. So, no, that's what I said. Yeah, that's what I say. I'm sure you were there too, because we got brothers from, I think even some brothers came from Phoenix. So, yeah. But that, you know, that's just, that was the one chosen few that you should never touch.
Yeah.
You know? So, but other than that, Father was real cool. I mean, another time we caught him riding by himself. We was at a Burger King and he slid past us and we hawked him down at the light. I'm like, where the fuck are you going? He was like, oh, I'm going to the clubhouse. You're not by yourself, you're not. You know what I'm saying? I think we were going somewhere else. And I'm like, oh, no, not by yourself. So we went with him, rolled with him to 108th Street. And I walked up in there and I'm like, some of the younger members in there were, you know, there too. And I'm like, what y'all doing? Like, he should not be riding out here by himself. I don't give a fuck what y'all say. Not at all. I don't care if he's just coming from his house. So, yeah. But like I said, the father was always cool. Had his little smart car. You know what I mean? Once he stopped riding, smart car get right in the pack. Like, it was like a full dresser. He had right in line. Like, he's a full dresser. Yeah. Yeah. Put it right out front. Whose little green smart car is this? Oh, that's the father. Oh, okay. Yeah. Shut the fuck up. Yeah. Motherfucker, you try to talk shit till you see who gets out the car. You're like, oh, yeah, shut it up.
Yeah, so, he's still out there doing it, you know?
And that was it. That was it. The father was all over the place. I remember the first time, you know, we had rolled out SGV, you know, had a reunion, and we had rolled out there. Father rode that bike all through that little desert. You know what I mean? Like a little CR80. I said, oh, shit. You a cold motherfucker. So, yeah. Yeah, he was all through the dirt. I said, oh, well, all right, my guy.
I think he kept his humor right up until the end there, too. And, you know, when we all knew he was going, we would all take turns, you know, not leaving him alone in the hospital.
Right. And,
you know, we come in, we think we're going to sit around and chat with him, and he goes to sends us out for M&M's and soda. Yeah. M&M's and soda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the first thing.
Yeah, that's when we'd be sitting outside the hospital, like 20, 30 deep, yeah. Night after night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that brought us together a lot. That healed a lot of rifts.
Yeah. Yeah. That is for sure.
So I'm going to put you on a spot again, Blade. Mm-hmm. We heard Fontaine telling us about the father. I know you've been around him.
Been around him, but you know, I didn't have the opportunity like Fontaine because he was already a little more frail and not out as much. I mean,
right.
And I came from the prospect class. There was a lot of us in my prospect class. You know, every so often clubs will grow, and I was in one of those prospecting classes where there was a lot of us. So we spent what time we could, but you know, you had to be careful about tiring him out too. You know, if you really wanted to speak with him, you had to go to his house, and then most of the time he sent us out for tacos. So you know, just being around him though, and seeing how people respected him, and not just from our own club, but from other clubs, how the people treated him. You learned a lot from that as well. But, you know, I unfortunately didn't get to ride with him just because, you know, but at that point in time, it was, he wasn't really riding like that. You know, he still had his bikes. He had, you know, he had multiple bikes, but he just wasn't riding like that. So, and, you know, finally, you know, I'm glad that I did get to spend a little time with him, you know, as he transitioned out, and I did get to chat with him, but, you know, it wasn't as much of the fun times as some of the other older members got to experience. Yeah.
So, Fontaine.
Yes.
And obviously I'm asking for a story that you can share publicly.
Okay.
But what do you think your most memorable time being in your club? What do you think that is? and what do you think that symbolizes? Like what does that event embody in your mind when you think about it?
Man, that's hard. I'm gonna be honest, because like I said, I've been here over a decade, so there's a lot of incidents and, you know, and occasions that embody a lot. The only thing I can say, I can't really pinpoint an incident, you know what I mean, or an occasion or whatnot. But you asked, like, what does it the club mean to me, or what does it embody to me?
Like, what is that? Like, when you think of that, like, situation or that occasion, whatever, right? And I know you said it's hard to narrow it down to one, but what is the theme there? Like, when you're looking at it, be like, all right, cool. Like, this is what brotherhood looks like. Or this is what accountability looks like. Or, you know, like, what did that instance do for you personally? Like,
what
help you grow in the club?
Okay, what it did for me, I would say, was it strengthened my faith in the club and what we're supposed to stand for. Because there are specific things that we stand for, and, you know, and even with our patch, each thing kind of means something. You know what I mean? Every color, every image, everything. And throughout my time frame, the roller coaster of certain incidents really has strengthened my, I guess you want to say faith or whatever, but maybe strengthened my belief in this club and again, what it really stands for. You know what I mean? Now, I'm sure in every club, you know, you kind of get those that come in and drift away and do all that shit. Me, I'm not going nowhere. I know what we stand for. I've been here from day one, or not from day one, but since I started, and haven't slipped since. I'm not saying other people have or haven't, but I know for myself, since I've been here, never took a leave of absence, never not had a bike, never any, you know what I mean? Never took a break, I should say. I was taught by the OGs that, you know, this is, you know, a lifetime commitment. And that's the way I took it. You know, when you get to this level of the game, it's supposed to be to the death. And when I looked around at the time, like I said, you still had the father, you had GA, you still had Sleepy, you know, the one who put the nail on the cross in our patch, he was still alive. All these OGs who started this and who made something to what, you know, comes in part of our uniform was still alive and hanging. So that was, I think, what made me be like, oh, yeah, I could be here till I'm dead.
So with the presence of so many, OGs, like founders, firstborn,
mm-hmm.
do you think that helped propel Chosen Few into the future from, like, because I think a lot of clubs, and it's just my personal opinion, right? I think a lot of clubs kind of struggled in like the 70s and 80s, right? Because there's just, you know, stuff happening that we're not going to get into, right? We all know. So I think clubs kind of struggled there. But then, you know, we look at like your club as an example, you know, like you guys were fucking growing.
Right.
So do you think that having those original pillars there, do you think that aided in the growth or even the validity in the statements of like, this is a lifelong commitment? Do you think that really helps people like visualize it and see it like, oh shit, this really is a lifelong commitment?
I think so in two ways. One, especially when you get to that level, say the 70s and 80s, the club had been around at least 20 years at that time. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the first thing. And then to understand what they went through to still be here 20 years later. So I think that's where, you know, it made it where people like, well, I know there's a strong foundation in that structure and that organization. That's why they've been through the shit they went through. They still here.
Piggybacking off of that, I'm going to say it. Also, what we stand for, it's bigger than the individual. And, you know, every so often a ship might need to be corrected, but it'll correct itself because of what we stand for, but what our values are, and what we believe in. And I think it doesn't matter, you know, where you're from, what your background is, what your skin color is, and I think we truly believe that, and it's worked. And it doesn't hurt to have the old guys around either.
Very much so.
Man, oh man. Well, I mean, I could spend all night like picking your brain apart, right? Because like this shit. I mean, I've done a lot of research, you know, on the father and a lot of the OGs there, just because like they're fucking pioneers in the community. You know, they were doing something that nobody else at the time was doing, right? Because your club leads the way in a few different areas, you know. And it's just fascinating to me that at a time where it was expected to where you stay with your own skin color, it was expected, not just accepted, but expected, that the father and the rest of the founders were like, why?
Yeah.
Why? And look what it's done. You know, look what it's done for. I think by example, it has bled over to a lot of other clubs, right? That look to the chosen few for guidance. Yeah, I just think that they had a much larger impact on the community than I think that they ever set out to have.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
But again, I could sit here, I could pick your brain all night about that. But
let me give Fontaine a plug here. Just you know, the stuff that the Long Beach chapter does for the community, that's something that needs to be recognized, and just in terms of not just the toy run, you know, that, you know, is always successful every year, but just they're really embedded in the community there. The things they do on Skid Row, I mean, they get invited to the parades. Didn't you get given the key to the city as well, Fontaine?
No, it wasn't the key to the city. It was they had me as the grand marshal of the parade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, getting commendations down at the Long Beach, you know, City Hall and that sort of thing. So, you know, they're very embedded in the community. And I love seeing my brothers do their thing. It's wonderful. You know, it gives you a lot of pride. So, you know, that's something that I wanted to just put out there.
And I thank you for that, boss man. But, you know, when we do that, I was going to call it shit, but I'm trying to be cool. When we do it, we just do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've always worked with, like, kids and shit when I was younger and shit. So, like, giving back to me was, like, to me, like, almost like second nature. So when my stepfather passed away, they had the little toy run going. We just kind of took it over because I had originally asked the club to help, right? And artist at the time, you know, was in the mother's shop, and he's like, well, we used to have our own toy run. And so I just looked at him. I said, okay, so you want me to put your name on it? Well, I said, say no more. And that's how it ran. And we've been pushing ever since. You know, we got to think it's 15 years. Well, 14 because of COVID, but technically 15 years. You know, and when it comes to the Skid Row thing, you know, we go because, you know, Shirley, who's from Beauty to the Streets, she asks us for help. You know, so that's the scenario with me. It's just like if I see somebody who needs some help and is kind of less than us, like, I don't know if it's a fault I have or what, but I feel like if we can help out, that's where it's at. The partying is always going to be here. The drinking, the smoking, the bike shit. We'll always be able to do that. They may not be able to eat tomorrow, though. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, you know I mean, so that's where my mindset is. When it comes to the toy run, sometimes their parents don't have shit. I remember one time about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I was riding through Long Beach. I stopped at this gas station, and this Mexican dude walks up to me, and he's like, hey, you guys, you're the one that does the toy run, huh, in Long Beach? And I said, yeah. I said, "You," and I'm asking him, am I going to see you next year? I said, yeah, you're going to be there, right? Woo, woo. And he looked at me, and this motherfucker started crying. And he said, bro, he said, I got to thank you. He said, because last year, he said, I had just got out of prison. He said, I had my son and I couldn't buy him shit. He said, I went to your toy run. He said, I got two toys and a bike. He said, you changed my life for me and my son. You know what I'm saying? So I was just like, damn. You know what I mean? So, and I know that's just what it is. You know what I mean? To us. And I think to me, sometimes it goes by in a blur because I'm too busy moving around trying to make sure it goes right. You know what I mean? I don't really sit back and worry about if I'm having a good time. My thing is, if they had a good time, that's all that matters to me. Me, I could give two fucks. I know when that day is over, I'm going to have a headache. I'm going to be tired. I've been up since 4:30. I get it. You know what I mean? I've been doing it over a decade, so I get what I'm up for. But at the end of the day, it's really about them. You know what I mean? Even when it comes to when we do the Skid Row thing, it's really like we're doing damn near security. Because some of the males down there, they get aggressive. They want to snatch people's plates and shit like that. And like, you can't do that. You know, when the kids get a haircut, I cut their hair because it's like, you got to go to school still, but you homeless. So at least let me give you a decent haircut with a little design so you can at least look like you're hanging with these other little kids. You know what I mean? Instead of me just, you going to school, you know, all fucked up or whatever the case may be. So, you know, a lot of time it's just to us, it's just second nature. And I make sure anybody that comes with us understands that. Don't think you getting out here work, you're going to get this extra kudos. The kudos came later. We wasn't expecting it. We was just doing it because that's what we do.
And that's what it's about, man. It's a community, right? And it's not just the biker community that we got to worry about. You know, we got to worry about that we're taking care of the local community as well. And then, and that has many different looks, right?
Right.
Whether it's whether it's supporting, you know, smaller businesses or bars and stuff like that, that's going to let us in wearing colors. You know,
just all that. Yeah, all that. And 'cause the thing is, like, at some point you got to break the stereotypical shit. We already looked at as demons and devils and gonna rob your mama. Your bike is loud, what you ride is loud. You know what I mean? You just look, you know what I mean? To the average individual, you look scary. So at some point you got to change that. You know what I mean? If that's the case, well, the boogeyman's gonna bring toys to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you stop being so scared of the boogeyman all the time. You know what I mean? The boogeyman's going to come to your bar and we're going to sit there and lace you with like $300-$400 and we're going to leave.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if anybody comes in here drunk, we're going to bounce him around for a little while, make sure you guys are cool, and then we're out of here. But some people don't see that. You know, like I said, when it comes to Long Beach, there's certain spots that we got. When we step down, they know, oh, well, chosen few, they good. They're going to make sure we're good. They good. Yeah, I mean, we had it before when I'd had a couple of my members like him up, you know, other civilians for fucking with the security at the establishment that we're at. Yeah, I mean, and they're sitting there thanking us. Oh, thanks. Woo, 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 woo. Trying to give us more drinks. Now we good because we're finna leave. You know,
yeah.
But the way we try to keep it, that way, you know, we don't have no issues where we at.
All right, on this happy note, I've got 8 minutes till my next call.
Well, I think that's Blade telling us that this episode has come to an end.
You're right.
So I do want to leave this on, you know, on a second positive note, right, from both you gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Fontaine, if you could say just one thing, you got a guy up and coming, whether he's prospected in your nation or he's listening to this somewhere, and he's prospecting for his club over there. What's one piece of advice you want to give him?
Be true to yourself. Be true to yourself. Because if you're not true to yourself, you're not going to be true to nobody. Which means you're not going to be, you know, that sponge you need to be for the knowledge someone's trying to give you. You know what I mean? Like, you have to really humble yourself and be true to yourself and make sure, you know, you at the same time following the right individual in the right club for your mindset and where you're at, like your heart. Because not every club is for everybody. sometimes you think because your friend is there or whatever the case, oh yeah, I'm gonna go over there, but it's not really for you. Maybe this group over here was for you. Doesn't mean y'all can't still hang out and be cool. You understand? So that's my thing. Just be true to yourself and understand where your heart and where your head is at. Because other than that, you're going to either quit. It's going to give you a bad taste in your mouth. You're going to be, as they call, a club hopper. Like, you don't want that. You want this lifestyle to be a positive in your life. Not, I mean, because it's going to have its negatives. They're going to come whether you want them to or not. And that would be my advice.
I think that's pretty solid fucking advice right there. How about you, Professor Blade? What do you got?
Similar in the sense that do your research before you jump into something.
Yes.
If you come to my club and I've gotten used to seeing you and all of a sudden you quit, you know, you're probably going to be dead to me, especially if you quit for the wrong reasons.
Right. So,
you know.
Right.
As you said, I mean, lifetime commitment. So
that's it. That's really it.
Yeah, I'm already dead to Professor Blade, so that's not
good. Oh, damn. I see dead people. I see dead people.
Oh man. Well, Fontaine Blade, thank you guys so much for taking the time out of your lives tonight to have this conversation with me, man. I had a fucking blast, and it was a pleasure to virtually meet you.
Oh, you too. Oh, that's for real.
I mean, I'm going to say it on the show, but, like, I ain't going to give details on the show. You know, now we connected on another way.
I got you. Yeah, for sure.
You know, and I hope – I'm just happy. That's all I'm going to say. I'm just happy.
I can understand.
What's that?
I said, I understand exactly what you're talking.
Yeah, my man.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it was, I had a fucking blast tonight. I hope our listeners are enjoying this. But at the end of the day, I really don't give a fuck because I do this for me, not for anybody else.
There it is.
So it is. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to this week's episode. And we'll get back at you later with something else. Maybe some other time soon. Maybe not. I don't know. We're going to see what Dave says.